AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
Let's go!
This is the Big East Sports Show
on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Always the biggest, the best in sports, the Big East Sports Show. Here we go on this Saturday morning. And before we get underway with so many amazing guests, we want to hear from you. Always live on social media at eRadio Sports. And you know what? Go to podcastarena.com. You will want to listen to so many of our incredible guests. In fact, coming up in hour one will be Dick Vermeil, legendary NFL Super Bowl winning coach. He's going to help us get ready for Super Bowl 56. Of course, the Rams, they're going to battle the Bengals. And also providing the helping hand in studio this morning. I love him. That is my producer, John Bellmer. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Third Coast Johnny. What say you, Johnny? The Rams and the Bengals, we're down to two teams.
Yeah, definitely two teams that I didn't expect. The Rams, I thought, had a good chance. But the Bengals, I mean, nobody expected the Bengals at the beginning of the year to be in the Super Bowl. It feels weird to say Bengals and Super Bowl in the same sentence, doesn't it?
Well, and you know, when we think about the Bengals, like a year ago, they had only won four games. And of course, Joe Burrow had totally decimated his knee. We didn't know what the future was going to hold for him.
Yeah, he's the reason that they're here right now. He's been super impressive. He came back very strong and immediately took a stronghold on the leadership of this team. And if you listen to these guys talk, they all talk about his strong leadership, the confidence that this team has, that they're playing with, is due to coaching and it's due to Joe Burrow.
Well, the Rams, on the other hand, they're making their fifth Super Bowl appearance and second in 4 years. And the last time they won the Super Bowl, you know what, Johnny? It was in 99. And one of my guests that's going to be coming up here in hour one is Dick Vermeil, legendary NFL Super Bowl winning coach. We were just talking about Joe Burrow. We've got to highlight Matthew Stafford. What stands out the most about him and just how impressive he is?
Yeah, it's been a while for them, too. Matthew Stafford coming from Detroit, it's got to feel good for him being with a bad organization, I guess you can say. I don't want to down talk the Lions, but a bad organization coming to a winning culture that Sean McVay's created in L.A. He has definitely stepped up. I think they could get here with Jared Goff. They couldn't get over the hump with Jared Goff. They can with Matthew Stafford.
Well, coming up, a guy who knows all about a winning culture, and that is legendary NFL Super Bowl winning coach Dick Vermeil, is coming up next at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Come on back.
Is the Big East Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Alyssa Walker Campbell, good morning. Welcome back. SportsMap Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. Many different ways to connect with us. We are always live on social media. On Twitter, at eRadio Sports. You can email the show, info@eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. And did you know you can take us anywhere, anytime, 24-7. Just download our app, Sports Map Radio. You bet, Super Bowl 56, the coverage is going to continue as we look forward to the big game. Here to help us out and get you ready is a gentleman who knows exactly what it takes to win it all. A Big E favorite, legendary Super Bowl winning coach, the great Dick Vermeil. Thank you so much for joining us. It's the first time on the show in 2022. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Yeah, it's always fun to join you.
Well, before we look ahead to the big game, but let's lead off with your takeaways from Kurt Warner's movie that was out at the end of 2021, titled American Underdog. It is such an inspirational movie. My family and I, we've watched it twice. What kind of feedback did you receive, and what did you share with Kurt after you watched it?
You know, I had the opportunity to host a private viewing in California, in downtown Philadelphia, and downtown Canton, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
And I enjoyed it more each time I saw it. It's very well done. You know, it's more than a football story about a quarterback winning the Super Bowl. It's a life story. There's a lot of great lessons that can be learned from really watching the movie. You know, it's a great investment, I think, as you said. I've received so many nice comments from friends, phone calls, emails, text messages that they just left the movie and really enjoyed it. We just left the movie and we were in tears when we left. And,
Yeah. You
know, it's just a good story. You know, and it covers all age groups. I think kids 10 years old will enjoy it, and guys 85 years old like me can enjoy it. It's really well done, you know, and I appreciated the fact that they used some of my exact conversations with Kurt as I spoke to him personally in a few years back, you know, so that added credibility to the movie for me.
Well, and certainly one of my favorite lines, actor Dennis Quaid played you, is when you said to Kurt, you know, destiny belongs to the underdogs. I mean, what do you want to prove? You know, do you remember that conversation with Kurt?
Yeah, I do. I didn't say it in those words. The words, I don't remember. You know, that's a long time ago. But I do remember saying, you know, Kurt, there's something I really like about you, and I just can't wait to find out what it is.
Yeah.
You know, and I've never forgotten that statement. I've forgotten other conversations and that, and many of them, but I didn't forget that. And they used it in the movie, which, again, added credibility.
You're listening to The Voice, legendary NFL Super Bowl winning coach, the great Dick Vermeil, back with us on Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. You know, when we think back to that time and the opportunity to coach Kurt Warner, what was going through your mind? I mean, did you think that he could play that well and he would go on to achieve such incredible success? The one thing that I took away from watching it is that you had a deep belief in him, a deep faith in him and his ability.
Well, I had an advantage as the head coach, not coaching any one specific position. During practices his first year, which they left the first year of his career with us in 1998 out of the movie, because they, you know, it would make it too long. But anyway, I watched him as our third quarterback throw the ball every day against our defense as the opposing quarterback. And I kept saying to myself, my God, this kid's impressive. No, chances are he can't do it in a game with a first team with 80,000 people in stands. You know, those kind of comments. But I know so many times I walked off the field and I would say, God, this kid can play or else our defense is terrible. You know, because he'd just pick us apart. So, you know, I had a belief that he would play and play well. No way could I predict he could play outstanding, you know. In the first six games, he had 18 touchdowns and two interceptions. Four of the first six games he played in, he had a quarterback efficiency rating of over 130. Rodgers hasn't done that. None of them have done it, you know. So it's just, you know what, I knew he could play. I could not predict he could play as well as he did.
Well, it was just a fascinating movie to watch. When we think about Kurt Warner, went from a stock boy at a grocery store to a two-time NFL MVP, a Super Bowl champion, and now a Hall of Fame quarterback. And, you know, I think about just your legendary, your Hall of Fame career. Life as an NFL coach, it's not easy. And I know you've been on my program many times. We've shared a lot of stories. But what do you think has been the key, or was the key for you to connect with your players on an individual level? What was kind of your philosophy with coaching? Because it really did go beyond the X's and O's.
I had a real advantage over a lot of NFL coaches because I started out coaching in high school, both as an assistant and a head coach, junior college as an assistant and a head coach, college as an assistant and a head coach. And I really just never stopped being what I was at that time, a guy that coached kids. And, you know, to me, pro football players were kids that were bigger, faster, and making money to play the game, you know, but they were still people. And if I had an edge in anybody, that experience helped me learn how to better connect with young people that you're demanding a lot from, you know. And you can coach without being demeaning. You can get upset without attacking the person. You can attack the problem. There's a lot of things you can do to avoid a negative environment, you know. And I one time, it's a true story. Uh-huh. I was at Hillsdale High School coaching, and the assistant coach, John Gilmore, was working with me, and his dad coached high school football for 45 years.
Wow.
And his dad made the statement to me. He says, you know, Dick, you can't make a champion out of a guy you continually call a chump. And I never
forgot.
You know, and so those kind of things add a foundation and a depth to your philosophy and your methods and your profile in coaching other people.
And, you know, the one thing we can say, too, is today you stay in touch with so many of your former players. What's that like? What's that mean to you?
I was pheasant with two of them yesterday. Neither one of them were walking too good because I played 10 years
ago. Right.
But, you know, I appreciate them and they appreciate me. My relationship with a lot of my former players is beyond player coach. You know, we're just damn good friends. We love each other. Mm-hmm. And we shared some really tough experiences and came out with mutual respect anyway. And that, to me, that's always been very critical.
Let's talk about the Chiefs. And what were your expectations coming into this season? Because they did not have that flourishing finish.
Well, you know, the best team doesn't always win.
Okay.
That's the only rule that they don't have in the National Football League anymore, that the best team has to win. All you have to be is the best team game day. And in my opinion, the Chiefs were the best team last week. They got beat because certain things didn't go well, and you've got to credit Cincinnati for doing what they did. It's tough to do. They're similar to my 1999 team.
Okay.
Win four games the year before and win the world championship the next year. Doesn't happen often. The other, when a losing team starts gaining momentum and confidence, the combined confidence building creates unbelievable momentum. And I felt right before the half, the Chiefs lost a great deal of momentum, and Cincinnati gained a ton of it. I felt they went into the locker room saying to themselves, you know, we've taken their best shot. Now we know we can go out there and beat them. And that's what happened. They did. Now, I don't know what I'm saying is true or not. But there's no question in my mind. If they played them five times, the Chief would beat them three or four times. Okay? But they didn't beat them that day. God bless them. I was rooting for them.
Well, it was impressive. I mean, the Bengals erased an 18-point deficit to be the Chiefs in the AFC Championship. You got to give them a lot of credit for what they were able to accomplish.
No
to punch their ticket. First time in over 30 years. But your former team, when we talk about the Chiefs, I mean, what should the focus be in the offseason? What should that top priority be?
You know, Andy doesn't miss a beat. It's amazing, you know, what he does. And he keeps improving what he did real well as well as the things he didn't think he did as well the year before. You know, he's just a magnificent teacher and coach and person. And, I have a little maybe more thought about running game than some coaches do, even in today's world. You know, I like a little bit more eye back with the tailback deeper and handle the ball coming downhill with, you know, and these kind of things. But that doesn't mean I'm right, and I'm not second-guessing Andy or any other team that does it a different way, you know. But I know you get – I feel you can get a little better play action out of the eye back when the quarterback under the center and that kind of stuff. But the game has changed so much, but you still have to block and tackle. You have to be tough. You have to play smart, not turn the ball over. You don't get a penalty at the critical time when you've made a big play and get a call back. Or you stop somebody and make a penalty and give them another opportunity. These things in a game like the Super Bowl coming up or even in any game, you got to do it right. You know, that's common sense, really. But sometimes it just doesn't happen.
It is down to two teams, the Bengals and the Rams. Super Bowl 56 conversation continues with legendary NFL and Super Bowl winning coach Dick Vermeil after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin legendary NFL coach, the great Dick Vermeil. We are going one-on-one with Dick Vermeil, legendary NFL Super Bowl winning coach. A lot of years in the NFL, coach for the Eagles, the Rams, and the Kansas City Chiefs. An incredible resume, coached 240 NFL games, pro coaching career spanned 19 seasons in the NFL. Just a moment ago, we were talking about your Hall of Fame quarterback in Kurt Warner, and Tom Brady made it official this week. He announced his retirement on social media. Coach Vermeil, how will you remember Tom Brady and his incredible legacy?
Well, I was disappointed he retired because I think he's a great example for athletes in general and for anybody.
Yeah.
If you really love something, you do it as long as you can. And, you know, and there's no question he could keep doing it. I was disappointed because, you know, a guy's example is a hell of a lot more important than his opinion, okay, or his advice. All you had to do was watch him year in and year out, watch him compete, and you know what it would take for him to prepare at 44 years old and go out playing as well as he ever played. I think that's such a great example for all Americans, everybody, male, female, whether you're an athlete or not an athlete. And I hate to see us lose that weekend image of Tom Brady.
Do you think if he was single that perhaps he would still have another 5 years in the league? I heard Shannon Sharp mention that this week.
Well, you know, I can't say. I really don't know. But you, obviously, he's a family man, and you know, and you make decisions based high percentage on how your family is and their frame of mind and their age groups. You know, we've all been through it. You know, I've got eight grandsons, three granddaughters, and now two great granddaughters. So a lot of decisions are made, including the entire family.
Yeah, and it's a new chapter for Tom Brady. What's he going to experience this first year when he walks away from the game and sees that the season is underway? What was that like for you personally?
Well, for me, the first time I walked away, I had to. You know, I was, like I said, I was burnt out. I was a mess, and I wasn't a good football coach. I got into broadcasting and really enjoyed it. They paid you more money at that time to broadcast and play football. And I finally got back in. I really enjoyed it. We won it all. I went home. That was a mistake. You know, and I don't live in regrets and all that kind of stuff, or I just don't, but I should have stayed. And when I found out the night they were handing out the world championship rings at a beautiful banquet to my players, it got, oh, what did I do? I leave these guys and hell, they'll be better the next couple of years than they are now. You know, I shouldn't have done it, but I wasn't feeling sorry for myself. And I went home because I felt it was time to go out a champion and be with my family and the grandkids and all that kind of stuff. And then I got called back with the Chiefs, and I'm so much appreciate having had that opportunity. And because it was spending 5 years in Kansas City with the kind of people that are in Kansas City and kind of ownership and the coaching staff and the players I had there was a real great way to finish a coaching career. Really, I really enjoyed it. My only disappointment, my only regret, Mike, is I didn't do a good enough job to hand Lamar Hunt the trophy named after him, the Lamar Hunt AFC Championship Trophy.
He is a Super Bowl winning coach, one of the best. Dick Vermeil has been joining us at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. The Rams are 4-point favorites against the Bengals. Will L.A. star power be too much for Burrow and the Bengals? How do you think this is going to play out?
Well, I think that's about right. You know, it's amazing how many times gamblers are right. But when I was coaching, I didn't want anybody to tell me what the point spread was. Okay, I didn't want to feel I was going to lose before we played, you know. But anyway, you know, I think the Rams are a little deeper football team all the way through every player, all the way through special teams, defense, and offense and different critical categories. Now, no one's throwing the ball more accurately than Burrow. Yeah, he led the NFL with 70% complete. Both quarterbacks have a very high ratio of touchdowns per pass attempt and these kinds of things, and yards per pass attempt and yards per completion and all that. But I think the game will come down to, again, who doesn't make the stupid penalty, who doesn't turn the ball over, who takes the ball away will win, these kinds of things. Who fails in the red zone when he should have scored, or who missed the field goal in the final second. That's the kind of game I think it will be. But if I were going to bet on the game, I would take the Rams.
So, Dick, what is your relationship today with the Rams? Because you're a part of obviously this incredible legacy with this organization.
Well, you know, I live a long ways away. I watch them play. I haven't been in the new stadium. The last Ram game I saw, they were playing in St. Louis. And I have a good relationship with the owner, Stan Kroenke. we text back and forth a little bit. Yeah, I think I have a good relationship with Sean McVay. I had breakfast with him one time for a couple hours, and I really enjoyed young, brilliant guy with an active mind and a great passion for the game, and I think a great ability to connect with people, yet strong enough to discipline a football team as a young man. Extremely impressed with him.
So how does one go about preparing for the Super Bowl, and perhaps through all your years in coaching, I mean, what was some of the best advice that you ever received?
Well, Chuck Noll was my consultant, going to the Super Bowl, because he'd been to four, and I visited with him a lot, and he said, Coach, don't forget how you got there. You know, sometimes you can get too fancy. You know, allow your team to be as good as they were and might be good enough to win it. And then do a few things that maybe you haven't done before, or add to, or you're going to emphasize this part of your game in this game because of this is what they dictate you do and you think you can do against them. But don't try to get too smart. Get all your preparation done in town before you go into the home site where the game is going to be played. I didn't have that advantage with St. Louis Rams. With the Eagles, we had a week bye. With the Rams, we played the championship game on Sunday, and we were on the airplane flying to Atlanta, Georgia the next day. So it didn't allow me enough time to screw it up, I'll tell you that. Okay, we won that one.
Super Bowl 56, the Rams battle the Bengals in Los Angeles. The countdown is on. I got to wonder, hey, Coach, will you guys be at the game?
Yeah, I think we're going to the game, yep.
Nice. And as we get ready to close out our interview, hey, Valentine's Day, it is just around the corner. Of course, the perfect time to pick up some Vermeil Wines, vermeilwines.com. What are they going to find when they go to your website?
Well, they're going to find us in the playoffs for the first time in 13 years. We're a winning organization for the first time. Business is very good. Our
Great.
Wine club now is up to 425 members and growing. Our write-ups and evaluations are very strong and positive, so it's going well for us. We're in the playoffs.
I love it. And my final question for you is, we got to congratulate you. You've been selected as a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What say you? I mean, is 2022 going to be your year?
We're going to find out next week.
That's right. Absolutely. We look forward to having that conversation. And again, Coach, thank you so much for stopping by. We always appreciate your
time. Always fun to be with you. Take care. Hello, everybody in Houston.
Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back on this Saturday morning. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell, always excited to talk some NBA. And we are thrilled to have back with us from NBA.com, and that is Mark Medina. Mark, good morning. Happy New Year. Your first time on the show in 2022. And I also want to say congratulations and give you a shout out on your brand new position with NBA.com. You're a veteran in our business. I mean, what has this been like for you?
Well, thanks for the kind words. I've reflected on these last few years. It's always been a joy being on your show, and happy for all your success. So,
well, thank you so much. Let's move ahead and talk about the NBA All-Star Game. The 71st one is just a few weeks away. In fact, February 20th. And the starters have been announced. And, of course, on Thursday, the reserves were named as well. So did you agree with the picks for the East and the West when we specifically talk about the starters, Mark?
Yeah, for the most part, I had the East starters as I voted. You know, Kevin Durant and Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, Trae Young, DeMar DeRozan. I differed on the Western Conference All-Stars. Instead of Andrew Wiggins with the Golden State Warriors, I had Draymond Green because, he's always been the straw that stirs the Warriors' defense and is the heart and soul of the team. While Andrew Wiggins has been more of a complimentary piece, but you know what? Shout out to all the social influencers that had gotten him votes, and he's also, had a breakout year. The other difference I had Chris Paul over Ja Morant. That was something that I was honestly just going back and forth on. I think Ja Morant's well deserving, but I was tilting toward Chris Paul because the fact that the Suns are one of the best teams in the NBA, and Chris is a huge reason why that is. But, Ja Morant's a deserving all-star, and I knew that he would get on the reserve ballot, even if he didn't get the starter's nod. But well deserved. These Grizzlies are a team to be reckoned with, and I wouldn't pick them yet as a championship contender, but I wouldn't be surprised if they are in that mix.
We're getting you ready for the 71st NBA All-Star Game and talking about who will be in that starting five, specifically in the Western Conference. I was a bit surprised that the Dallas Mavericks, Luka Doncic, was not named a starter. So why do you think he was snubbed?
You know, the Dallas Mavericks have, you know, been this team that's been, you know, hovering above and below 500. You know, Luka Doncic's play has been amazing, but the next step for him has been knowing how to trust his teammates and elevate them. And while that responsibility isn't solely on him, the supporting cast is what it is, he has a way of, you know, just doing things too much for his own good. And a lot of times that can be good, but sometimes it's detrimental. And I'm also, you know, measuring Luka's body of work against guys like Steph Curry, Chris Paul, Ja Morant. And so I think, you know, his exclusion has more to do with all the other guys and how talented they are than any of their shortcomings. But it also doesn't help to the point that I mentioned that, you know, the Mavericks have been an inconsistent team. And with Luka being the star player, he has to be able to find ways to navigate that.
He is simply one of the best NBA writer, reporter for NBA.com. Mark Medina is our very special guest this morning at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. We don't want to get too far into our interview. We'd love to connect with you. You can join us live on Twitter, at eRadioSportsInfo, at eRadioSports.com, and go back and listen to all of our interviews at PodcastArena.com. Mark, reach out, connect with our audience. Where can they find you online and all of your amazing articles?
NBA.com, Twitter handles MarkG_Medina, Instagram handles Medina Syracuse, and yeah, all the work will be there, both written and video.
Okay, so when we talk about the NBA All-Star Game and the starting five, you're a voter. I mean, what was your criteria? What were you looking for when you cast your votes?
Yeah, I think it was a mix of their star talent and how consistently productive they've been, and then also, you know, how good the teams are with winning. But there is a little bit of a gray area. I mean, for example, LeBron James with the Lakers, I didn't hesitate in voting him as a starter, but it's not like they're a team that is the best in the West. But, you know, when you're looking at LeBron James and the impact, I think that if he didn't provide those numbers and wasn't available, the Lakers would be a lottery team. Same thing with Nikola Jokic with the Denver Nuggets. They're a team that has been in a similar position with the Lakers. Same idea. If not for Nikola Jokic, the Nuggets would be a lottery team. But I did also want to reward, you know, some of those teams that are at the top of the conference. When you're looking at, you know, the Golden State Warriors with Steph Curry and the Phoenix Suns with Chris Paul. So I think that idea, you know, tilted the scale to what I was talking about with my previous vote with, do I decide between CP3 or Ja Morant? You know, Chris had the edge because, you know, the Suns are a better team. But, you know, in fairness to Ja Morant and the Grizzlies, they're not too far behind.
Just a moment ago, we were talking about Andrew Wiggins, a little bit controversial. Some folks felt that he shouldn't have been in that starting five. But can you take us inside the mind of, you know, some of the writers? Why did they feel like he deserved to start?
Well, here's the reality. There were some writers that voted for him, but he got in because of the fan vote.
Okay, the popularity.
The way the starters are determined, it's 50% fan vote, 25% media vote, 25% players. And, you know, look, we all have our shortcomings here, but when you look at it objectively, for all the shortcomings the people in our field have, like, they've been the most objective. The players don't tend to take the vote seriously. Sometimes they vote for their teammates or guys that just aren't deserving at all. And the fan vote, you know, they get a lot of them correct, but it also can become a popularity contest. And in Andrew Wiggins' case, you know, he was able to get some social influencers to bump up the vote. And as a result, you know, I think Draymond Green was more deserving. But the reality is, in fairness to Andrew Wiggins, he had an all-star caliber season where I think if he got in as reserves, I wouldn't have blinked twice. He's been a lot more consistent with the Warriors. I think it's been a combination of, you know, because of the Warriors' environment and the fact that they don't need him to be a number one option, it's been a much better fit than he had with the Minnesota Timberwolves. But in fairness to Wiggins, he's also elevated his game where he has become a really dependable secondary scorer and, you know, one of the best defenders on the team. And I think when you also add in the fact that Klay Thompson's just been coming back from his, you know, 2.5 year absence and no longer as of yet can fulfill that job description of defending the opponent's top perimeter players, you know, Andrew Wiggins' value has been very paramount to their success.
Mm-hmm. And Andrew Wiggins certainly has been lighting things up since his All-Star selection and has been very impressive. And you lead me to my next question. I mean, a great point. I mean, is the NBA All-Star voting broken? I mean, does the system put too much stock in fan popularity? And in your mind, I mean, how much of a value should we put on fan participation in their opinion? Because sometimes it does seem like it's coming down to the most popular player.
Yeah, I think that the NBA will continue to tweak these things. They're very open with making changes. I think at the end of the day, they want it to be interactive. This All-Star game is for the fans, and so they want to spur fan interest.
Yeah, good point.
And, you know, when you look at recent years, this is why they proportionalized that fan vote with player vote and media vote. And honestly, for all the fan shortcomings, I would put more criticism on the player vote, because in the last few years, there's been, if you go through, you know, who voted for who, it's anonymous, but they have a tally of which players are getting votes. And there's a lot of guys at the end of the roster that get votes, guys that haven't played all season getting votes. I mean, for example, guys like Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons were getting All-Star votes from players. And while those are All-Star caliber players, like, there's no way they deserve those votes. Like, Ben Simmons hasn't played a single game all year, and Kyrie Irving has been a part-time player the entire season. So that's where I think, as much as the players know the game, like, their self-interest has been widely exposed with this. So I think moving forward, their voice should be counted, but there also should be accountability for, you know, taking the process seriously.
You're listening to The Voice, NBA writer, reporter, NBA.com. That is Mark Medina joining us this morning at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. And speaking of moving the conversation, let's move ahead and talk about the Lakers. Just a moment ago, you were talking about LeBron. They have been mediocre this season. What is the biggest reason for the struggle?
Well, there's a huge percentage of blame pie. I would put the majority of it on the front office. This is how they constructed the roster, you know, getting Russell Westbrook, losing some of their depth, and, you know, good defensive players. After that, I would put it on Russell Westbrook. He knew that he was coming in as a third guy behind LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and he hasn't really adjusted his game. He's been playing like he has when he was with the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets and the Washington Wizards, and that's not what they wanted from him. Then I'd put it down to Anthony Davis. He hasn't lived up to his mantra of what he did in the 2020 championship run with being consistently aggressive, being able to be consistently healthy. You know, the healthy part is sometimes it's unavoidable, but, you know, there was an emphasis that he said that he took last offseason with changing his training regimen so that he wouldn't become so injury-riddled as he has been in other seasons. Then the other blame I would cast on is on the role players, but you can only put so much blame on role players because they are role players for reasons. They have, you know, certain deficiencies and there are certain things they do well. But the two people that I would not put blame on at all for this is LeBron James as a player. He's, you know, been able to, you know, replicate numbers that he has had in his prime, and I would not put any blame on Frank Vogel, the coach, because he's trying to make the best of what he has had, and he's been proven as a coach, especially on the defensive end, but when you don't have good defensive players, there's only so much you can do. But even if I absolve LeBron James as a player, he does deserve some blame for where they're at, because he had a pretty significant say with how the roster was going to be constructed. And I think the Lakers should have towed a better line of, you know, not allowing LeBron to have such influence over the roster. It's inevitable in today's NBA. Top stars should have a voice, but there needs to be a mechanism in the front office, much like the training staff, when they know how to protect players from themselves.
Our NBA news and notes continues with Mark Medina after this quick timeout.
This is the Big East Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell
Hey, welcome back. We're going to hit the hardwood and continue the conversation with NBA writer, reporter from NBA.com, and that is Mark Medina. So, Mark, do you anticipate that the Lakers might make some roster moves by the trade deadline? I mean, they got to get some guys that can play some defense, right? That's one of the biggest issues.
Yeah, they would love to, but they don't have any assets. No one's going to take Russell Westbrook's contract because of the size number and his, you know, weaknesses. And the only other attractive asset the Lakers have is Talen Horton-Tucker. But I don't think the Lakers want to trade him. They've developed and groomed him. They see some upside, and I don't know how much more you'll get in return. So they're going to make calls, you know, due diligence, but I don't think it's going to lead to anything. So I would expect that this is the Lakers roster that they have moving forward, and you know, that could be for better and for worse. For better, you know, they get healthier the second half of the season. For worse, it's the same old as the first half. I'm tilting toward, I think, relatively speaking, it's going to be better in the first half because there will be, I think, games that LeBron James and Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook will play a lot more than the first half of the season. But even when you account for that, I think it's inevitable there's going to be injuries with other players on the team because it's veteran-laden. And frankly, even with a full roster, I don't think they're good enough to compete in the West. I think the best-case scenario for them is to get to the second round. And the worst case is not making the playoffs at all or even the play-in tournament. So a lot of challenges ahead for them.
So what does the future hold for Russell Westbrook?
That's a good question. I mean, he has another year left on his contract after this season. You know, you wonder, do the Lakers try to see what they can get in the offseason? Again, I don't think there's a market for him. So I think you have to see how the second half plays out. But there's already talk about, okay, will this be the last contract Russell Westbrook has? Like, it is that dire.
And, wow.
And the thing that's ironic about Westbrook is that he's 32 years old. It's not like father time's catching up to him. He
right.
still has shown those amazing bursts of athleticism and aggressiveness, and he has great games, but he hasn't shown an ability and a willingness to adapt his game on a consistent basis. In fairness, he has improved his play lately, but I'm still in kind of wait-and-see mode to see if that is more of the trend than just a short-term blip. But the reality is he hasn't shown an ability, even if he is willing, to be able to modify his game. And that is that kind of the calling card for how long stars can last in this league. How much can you still maintain the things that made you great while still making tweaks to your game? But unfortunately, you know, the things that made Russell Westbrook an all-star earlier in his career are the things that are becoming a detriment now of, you know, high flying, being high risk, high reward, mm-hmm. and, you know, going 100 miles an hour. You have to know how to shift gears. And unfortunately, he has shown glimpses of that, but consistently, he hasn't shown that he can do that.
We are wrapping up our time. NBA writer, reporter for NBA.com. That is Mark Medina. And I want to direct all of our listeners this morning to one of your recent pieces as part of the NBA Top 75 series. You shine the spotlight on Russell Westbrook. What are our listeners going to find when they pull it up online?
Well, look, I mean, I shared my thoughts about how he's been with the Lakers, but I think, you know, in fairness to his whole career, that Russell Westbrook experience has been turbulent at times. It's also been exciting, but at the end of the day, he is the all-time leader in triple doubles, and that takes a lot of skill and hard work to do on a consistent basis. So, you know, he has a lot of shortcomings, mm-hmm. but he's in the top 75, deservedly so, because there's a lot more positive attributes that make him a great player.
Good stuff. Mark Medina, NBA writer, reporter. Check him out on NBA.com. Have a great weekend. Stay warm. We look forward to connecting again real soon. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network, the fastest 2 hours in radio. Come on back.